How's that working for you? Anyway, we're going to start to record now, and I bought a microphone so that you wouldn't hear the rustling of the pages, but I didn't bother to figure out if I had a plug on it on the phone when I came because I'm an alcoholic. And then Lyle pointed out that I have that thing that they sent me with the phone, and so next time we'll have the microphone. So when we have the handouts, there's a lot of rustling of the pages, mostly by me. And it won't interfere with the talks anymore. For those on the podcast, I've done a lot of thoughts on recovery, and I'm going through the steps, and I did one on fear, initial part of fear. I did all of resentment, and I'll follow through that and work through the steps and kind of how I see the steps today following the big book. It's helped me a lot. I hope it helps somebody else. Tonight, where I'm working with others, we used to stop the book at the end of the chapter working with others, and then somebody came up with a novel idea that maybe we should do the other chapters, employers, family afterwards, vision for you. And so I had to change my mind and decide it was a good idea, and we did it, this summer, and they were really good, and we'll go through that again. For step 12, we're probably going to look at when we finish the chapter working with others, I like to look at the steps we took by Joe McHugh. People have got a lot out of that book, haven't you? And he follows this, and we're going to look at that. And then I'm starting to pull some stuff from the 12 and 12 that's good for this. He wrote essays on the steps. It's not the instructions, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. I heard something today. It has nothing to do with this. I guess it does have to do with everything, but listening to Sandy Beach, he said in the 12 and 12, he says there was a moment when we decided that humility was something that we wanted and that we desired rather than being humiliated. And I can see that. And he talks about humility, admitting we're wrong, looking at ourselves, willing to change our minds, willing to see things differently, willing to change. So I really got a lot out of that tape. Sandy Beach died a couple years ago, but he really changed my life. I never met him, but I think I probably listened to every talk he did, and you hear a lot of that when I share. So tonight we're going to start with working with others. It's chapter 7. Notice it follows the interaction chapter. At the end of interaction, 188, it says, faith without works is dead. But that is not all. There is action and more action. And so faith without works is dead is from the book of James. And there's several ways to look at that. If you have faith, you'll see it through your works. And through your works, as the result of your works, you'll have faith. So it's kind of a circle. And I think it symbolizes the whole program. And they used to say that at the meetings, Bill and Bob and Ann Smith, faith without works, they read the book of James for the first 6 months, the first year. That's what they read at their gatherings. And then it starts working with others. Practical experience. Notice the word experience. We don't talk about that enough, but experience is what they're describing in the big book. They're not lecturing you on knowledge. They're lecturing you on experience. So this is really the experience of these people. And then if you want their experience, you'll do what they did, right? And you can't argue with their experience because it's their experience. And they had a ability to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And that's what I had when I came in here. And they were able to recover for that. And I still have a hopeless condition of mind and body today if I'm living it on self-will. And so I have to continuously do these steps to connect with my higher power and so that I can have a life of peace and serenity. Practical experience shows that nothing so much ensures immunity. Now, immunity is protection or exemption from something. Immunity from drinking. So, powerful statement. As intensive work with other alcoholics. We drink because we have an obsession of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And our mind tells us that we seek the ease and comfort of alcohol, right? And it's usually triggered by self-centeredness, right? So, if I'm working with someone else, I can't be living in my crap, right? I'm getting out of self, and then my obsession of the mind won't have power because I'm out of self. It only has power when I'm in self-centeredness. So that's what I wrote. I wrote, question myself, why? Because if I'm working with someone else, I'm turning my thoughts to other people, turning away from myself. And that's the theme of the big book, service, love and service, service to others, service to God. And working with an alcoholic is turning myself away from me. And I think it's true. What it says in the big book on page 84 is you turn your thoughts to others, right? When you have resentment, fear, and selfishness, self-centeredness. It doesn't say alcoholics, but there's certainly enough alcoholics that we have to help. And so when I ever get into some self-centered thinking, I just call somebody I'm working with or somebody in the program and talk to them and ask them what's going on or how I can help them. It says it works when other activities fail. So if you're down on yourself, if you're in self-centered thinking, and we talked about self-pity Sunday night, it was really good. It'll be on the podcast, will be out probably next week. We read from the steps we took. But when we're in self-pity, then we're separated so far from God, and the get out of self-pity, I have to turn myself to someone else I can help. And I think that's a basic theme of Scripture, get out of yourself. Turn to others, how you can be helpful to them. So this is their 12th suggestion. So the steps are a suggested action. So this is the 12th suggested action. Now, the program of recovery is the steps. And they suggest that you do the program of recovery. And so the steps aren't suggested. It's just suggested that you do the program of recovery. And steps, it can be a noun and a verb. I heard that. Think about that. So the steps can be a set of steps, a noun, but the verb is actually taking the steps. And so the steps don't help me unless I take them and I go up them. And the more we go, keep working the steps, the further we get away from our self-centeredness. So the 12th suggestion, and here's what it is. This is a good one. Carry this message to other alcoholics. That's their 12th suggestion. Now, you hear a lot about the 12th step, but the 12th step suggestion is carry this message to other alcoholics. Does anybody think that's a good line? All right, so we have to know what the message is. What is the message that we have to carry? Everybody thought it was good to carry the message, but what is the message? Well, the message is everything up to page 88. This is the message. This is the message that they give you, and to take this information, and you're going to read how we suggest that you give this book to someone, and you have them read it, and then you go through with it. So this book was meant to be the message. It's not the treasure, it's the treasure map. So this is the treasure map to God and to a recovered situation. And so we have a lot of messages in AA at the meetings, but the message we want to get is study this book, do everything in these pages, follow these directions, and then tell us how your life is. And then the 12th suggestion is carry this message to other alcoholics. Read the book with them, go through the steps, work the steps with them. See, that's what sponsorship was. In the beginning, sponsorship was working the steps. It wasn't a social thing. It wasn't going to meetings and having coffee. The sponsor was the one who got you into the hospital and actually had to pay for it sometimes. He sponsored you. Sponsored is an Oxford Group term. It means I sponsor you to come into the Oxford Group that you want what we have. And so that's why they did this. They worked with the newcomer before they ever went to the meetings in the beginning. And so they weeded out the people who didn't want this. And so the sponsor, you're sponsoring, saying, Jimmy, I'm going to take you to the meetings. Jimmy wants this. Say hi to Jimmy. You see, and that's what it was. And the message was that you can do these things and your life's going to change. You'll have a power in your life and you won't have the obsession of the mind. And you'll be able to have a service to God and others. It says you can help when no one else can. Well, probably, because we're the only person who can, only an alcoholic can carry the message to another alcoholic. That's why treatment centers, you know, you have people leading the groups who've never been to an AA meeting. You know, in a lot of these treatment centers, they've never read the book, they're not alcoholics. And so it becomes a therapy, it becomes a theoretical discussion of things rather than the practical program of action. And that's not good or bad, but that's just how it is. I can help when no one else can. Remember, it says, we will not regret the past or shut the door on it. Anybody like that? Well, God, you say, gee, I regret my past. Well, of course we regret it, but we don't regret it because it can save my life and someone else's. And I have to remember my past or else I'm going to repeat it, right? It says, you can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. I have to remember that. When you've been sober a while, you're working with new people and they drive you crazy. And you have to say, well, you know, they're pretty ill. And we have to remember that. And if I'm stewing about something, my wife says, no, remember, they're very ill, Michael. And I said, great. And implying that, you know, I have my issues too, you know. But we're not going to discuss my marriage today. That'll be next week. I hope she doesn't listen to these podcasts. She helps with the site and everything, but she's great. I love her. Life will take on a new meaning. Anybody like that line? Mm-hmm. Powerful. Love it. So what was the old meaning? What is a new meaning? You see, when you read the book, it asks you questions. What was your old meaning of life? My old meaning of life was trying to manage life well to get some satisfaction and happiness out of it. Trying to arrange the play to suit me, the ballet, remember? Didn't work. I still try to do it, but I know when I'm doing it now, I don't feel good. No, the new meaning is how I can be of help to other people, how I can be of service, how I can be the person God created. Not what I'm going to get anymore, but what can I do, how can I be? And I want to be the person God created, and then I'll have everything. Material things aren't important anymore when you've been here a while. You know, they're just a matter, a way of servicing others. So life takes on a new meaning. And here it is, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. Now, the way they write in the big book, he says life will take on a new meaning. So I just ask you what it is. Well, he's giving you an example. You can watch people recover. You can see the people you help others. You can watch loneliness vanish around you and others. And to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. Now, there's a big message in here that I see, at least it's the way I see it. You may not agree. But when they talk about watching people recover, you're seeing them help others, you see loneliness vanish, you see a fellowship grow up about you. This is different than when we talk about the fellowship today. This is the fellowship of the Spirit. These are people who are seeking God together, right? These are people working with each other. They're helping each other. And we talk about the spirit of the fellowship, but this is the fellowship of the Spirit. And I think they talk about that in the book. I think in the Vision of You, isn't that how it ends? Mm-hmm. It says, you will join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. See, they weren't interested in the spirit of the fellowship, which we a lot of us like the spirit of fellowship, right? But that we're supposed to be in the spirit of the fellowship to bring us to the fellowship of the Spirit. We want to be all together trying to do this deal, trying to help others, trying to be a service. And then if we're doing that, then we can't be lonely anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and this fellowship grows up about you. And it grows up about you if you're doing it and you're seeking it. Because they say later in the book, I think it's a vision for you again. You will find the fellowship you seek. So what fellowship are you seeking? That's the fellowship you find. This one speaker says the people you're hanging around with are the people you're going to become. So who are you hanging around with? What are they doing? What are their characteristics? So I got a lot out of that because people, I see it as people recovered, helping others, carrying this message. That's the fellowship of the Spirit. And so if you complain about the meetings, it's maybe because there's not a fellowship of the Spirit there. So all you could do is you could try to bring that Spirit into the fellowship of the Spirit. It says, you know you will not want to miss it. Well, if we're alone and we're not part of that, why do the deal, you know? And so that's one of the greatest joys of doing this is to be with others and have friends and people are doing it together. And it's the bright spot of, and frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of their lives. Why? I've heard it said that the newcomer is the most important person every meeting. That's not in the big book. I've never seen it in the big book. But newcomers are important because they are an opportunity for us to be of service, right? And the more I work with the newcomer, the more I ensure my recovery. Remember, the foundation of your recovery is working with others. And so we want new people to come in because it's an opportunity for me to grow spiritually and to help them. And with each other is the bright spot of our lives. For those people who are sitting here not sponsoring somebody and going through the book with them, you're missing the whole deal to me. There's nothing quite like that, working with somebody, watching Renee get 6 months, and I know he's had an interesting journey, but he's doing it, and he feels better, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, and you can see it in his face. I can see a change in him just lately. And to see that, there's nothing can replace that. I guess it was when I practiced oncology and I could see patients getting better and they just so desperately wanted to, it made me feel so good. I didn't take any of the credit. It just was able to be, to do the things that God let me. But you can't replace that feeling. And so the bright spot of our lives, so I wrote why. I wrote love and service. I wrote this else. It says, to see a fellowship grow with about you. I wrote with others on the broad highway. Remember, it talks about we will be on the broad highway. And it says we walk hand in hand. You walk hand in hand with the new man down the road to spiritual progress. That's on page 100. So I got a lot out of that, those two paragraphs. I mean, it's really the deal. I was thinking these first few pages here and working with others really should be read at a lot of meetings. It has a lot of powerful spiritual information in it. It says, perhaps you're not acquainted with any drinkers who wanted to recover. Well, it's different today. We get a lot come in here, but I don't know how many of them want to recover. That's another story. And that might be why the success rate's so low, because the only people who went to those meetings in the beginning were those who wanted to recover, were desperate. And even them, only half of them made it. You know, this is a tough disease. I'm so grateful just to be here today. Anybody ever get down or worry or fear or a little self-pity? Then just look back. It says, look back at the things that came to you when you put yourself in God's hands. Greater than anything you could have done. Look at our lives today. For all of us. I mean, we shouldn't even be here. We're so lucky. And that won't stop us from stewing tonight about some crap, right? Because we're alcoholics. But that's why people say gratitude, attitude of gratitude. Because if you're in gratitude, then you can't be in self-pity. I don't think they can exist at the same time. It says, you can easily find somebody asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They would be only too glad to assist you. They had no idea what was going to happen when they wrote this book in 1939, did they? Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. That's true. We want to preach. We want to reach out to them, but we have to be careful. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists, prejudgment about us. But I think that's changed a little bit. But the public still doesn't understand the insanity of our disease. They don't understand. But they're glad we're going to AA. You never hear anybody say anything bad about AA. But they still don't understand this, but there's a glad there's a place we could go to get away from them and maybe get better. But AA is always respected. You know why? Because we don't have an opinion on anything. And we're anonymous at the level of press, radio, or films. And so AA is respected. It says, but it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you could be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. Now, there are situations where somebody will call me and you'll go over and somebody's not sure they're an alcoholic or not, and this and that. You talk to them. They're going to describe how you do that. It's different than today. People come here, they come to AA, and then they're already here. But we don't really do what they're saying a lot. But if we do this, it's much more effective. That's why I try to get to know the person, find out what was going on. And to be helpful is our only aim. And that's really our own purpose, is to be helpful. It says, what is our purpose? Remember in AA? And it says on page, I'm getting old, I can't remember. I think it's 83. Our primary purpose, no, 78. Our primary purpose is to be a maximum, is to fit myself to be a maximum service, page 77. It says, at the moment, we're trying to put my life in order. That's good, right? Mm-hmm. It says, but that's not an end in itself. My real purpose is to fit myself. You see, not that, I always read that my real purpose was to be of service to God and others, but that's not what it says. My purpose is to fit myself. And if I'm fit, in fit spiritual condition, then I'll be able to be of service. So once I get in fit spiritual condition with God, then it's automatically that I'm going to be of service to Him and others. It says, when you discover a prospect for AA, find out all you can about him. So they really worked one-on-one in the beginning. It was a different world. There was no, most people didn't have cars. There was no travel. There was no TV. They lived in neighborhoods. You know, it was a whole different world. There was a community. Find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, I like this one, don't waste time trying to persuade him. And what I find is that if you see somebody who can't quit drinking, they really haven't taken the first step. And I can't make anyone defeated. I've tried, but I can't do it. Any of you do it? I can't make somebody be convinced of their hopeless condition of mind and body. It has to come from within. And I do think that's where the grace of God came to us in the room, that we could see it. There was a moment when God, we'll be able to see the truth about ourselves. Remember it says the people who cannot or will not do this are those who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. I struggled with that. I said, what the hell are they talking about? Some psychological babble. But to me, it's that they couldn't see the truth about their hopeless condition of mind and body. And there was that moment, I know for me, when I was obviously defeated, I could see it. I couldn't fix this thing. I couldn't fix my life and others. And I got down on my knees. I asked God for help. And to me, that's what hitting bottom is. It's that moment of complete defeat where I could see it. It's not circumstances. And I think that's the grace. I think God gives that moment maybe to every alcoholic, but some just go right through it. And the ones who are here today, at least we got here. So I'll be interested to see what people say about that. We'll open it up in a little bit. But don't waste your time trying to persuade him. You may spoil later opportunity. I know I went to see this one guy, this woman wanted me to talk to her husband. So I gave him a big book, and I know this was years ago. And I just talked to him a little bit. It was obvious to me that his life was a complete effing mess. He still had this illusion that he could manage things. You know, we could see it, but they can't. And I gave him the big book, and I said, well, you know, if things get bad enough, look at this book and call me. And he went to Valley Hope a year later, and he's sober today. And the book made a difference. You never know. So we should never shut the door. We're very good, I think, in AA welcoming people back. But maybe we should work more in trying to keep them here. I don't know. It may spoil later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. They should be patient, realizing they are dealing with a sick person. They used that twice, that we're very ill. We're very sick. And what is wrong with us? What's our sickness? It's a spiritual malady, that we're separated from God, and we're separated from our Creator, and we're living in self-centeredness. And when we do that, we get spiritually ill, and then we become physically and mentally ill. But most people, when they come here, they don't know that. But we know that from people who've been here while we studied this, and we're doing that. If there's any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of condition, his religious leanings. Now, I think if we did this with new people, people who know the book and have done this, if we maybe take this approach, maybe we would have better results. So I was really thinking a lot about this, how I could change how I meet with a new person. I don't know about the wives, but that might not be a bad idea. You need this information to put yourself in his place to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. That's interesting, how you would like him to approach you. And think about that when you approach somebody. I think that's this idea of being loving and tolerant, trying to be understanding, putting yourself in the situation to be a maximal service. Sometimes it's wise to wait until he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it's better to risk it. Remember, they talk about, you know, if you're not convinced that you can't control your drinking, keep drinking. That's what it says in the big book. Try controlled drinking. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of the spree, or at least for a lucid interval. I was going to say something really gross. Maybe I should turn the microphone off. But to me, having an alcoholic try to stop drinking is like somebody controlling diarrhea. I mean, it just can't happen. And then we don't realize it. People who aren't us, they don't realize it. They think it's insane, right? We keep doing these insane things. But we can understand it because we have that disease and we understand the mental obsession. And we can relate to that. Then let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good. Now, here it is. See, Dr. Bob would ask somebody, are you quit for good? Not, do you want to quit today or for 24 hours? Do you want to quit for good? Are you done? And if he would go to any extreme to do so. So this should be really your question for the new person. Do you want to quit for good, and will you do any extreme to do so? So then they'll say yes. So you'll say, okay, I want you to read doctor's opinion and call me tomorrow. Oh, I can't do that. I got to watch Big Bang tonight. You know, it's endless. You'll see people are hopeless. And they're crying, and they're on their knees, and they're so bad. And they say, this is the greatest meeting I've ever been to. I think you're wonderful, blah, 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 blah. All this crap. So I say, great. I want to see you tomorrow night. Oh, I can't. I got to go bowling. You know, or something like that. I mean, you all understand what I'm saying. The alcoholic, it's very tough to find. If he wants to quit for good, is he defeated? Would he go to any extreme to do so? You'll see what they do here, how they approach that. They have the man read the book. They have him decide if he's going to do it. And then they see if he wants to do the work. Remember Jim? Jim couldn't stop drinking, remember? They worked with him many times. And then he got drunk again, and he came back, and he told him once again, right? But they were still there for him. But they couldn't convince Jim till Jim was defeated. The same with Fred, right? Fred drank on a perfect day. And when he came back, he said, you know, I didn't believe what you guys told me. But there is that queer mental twist before the first drink. And he realized he had no power. Then he was able to understand he was defeated. And then he said, it seems, what did he say? It seems like a drastic proposals. But once he gave himself to them, he changed completely. So anyway, if he wants to quit for good, and he would go to any extreme to do so, that's why you have to take the first step 100%. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. You see the word recovered? When I heard that somebody years ago tell me they were recovered, I thought they were being arrogant, you know. But they use it in the book. It's called recovered. Now, what does that mean? Recovered means that the obsession of the mind isn't dominating you today. That you have some power in your life that you can see the truth about alcohol today. And it talks about page 85, the problem has been removed. We're in fit spiritual condition. We react differently to alcohol. We look at it as a hot flame, right? And we get that through our relationship with God, and that's recovered. So recovered is a fragile thing. It's something you have to continuously maintain fit spiritual condition. They talk about that, right? We have a daily reprieve on the maintenance of fit spiritual condition. And so if I maintain my fit spiritual condition, I'll be recovered. But if I start slacking off, pretty soon the mental obsession will come back, and I won't have any defense against the first drink. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who, as part of their recovery, try to help others, and we would be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. So that's who we are. We're a fellowship of people who try to help others. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. Now here's an interesting line. You might place this book where he could see it. They wrote this book so that you could take this book to the new person. And these were the specific directions on how they recovered. There was a lot of thought given in how this book was written, the words, every word. A very spiritual book. and they thought that this book would offer a path to the solution. They talk about really followed our path, right? They want you to thoroughly follow this path and then tell us what happened. There's no guarantees in AA. They don't even tell you what the result is. They just say, do this and see what the result is, and then you tell us, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. I tell you, I've done this. I continue to do it. My life is better than I could have ever dreamed. Doesn't mean I don't have fear or anger, the character defects, but I have spiritual tools to deal with them, so they don't have to dominate me. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide them, but urge them not to be over-anxious, for that might spoil matters. They talk here, the family should not try to tell your story. If he needs hospitalization, you should do that. Then they talk about the doctor approaching the person. He should be under no pressure. Calling him when he is still jittery. They thought that was a good idea. He may be more receptive when depressed. Now, we talked about alcoholic depression Sunday night, which is just self-pity, which is a excessive self-absorbed unhappiness over one's troubles. Now think about that. An excessive self-absorbed unhappiness over my troubles. And that's what self-pity is, and I wrote depression. That's what it means when an alcoholic tells me they're depressed. They're in complete self-pity, it's dominated their lives. There's a clinical medical depression, but I think this describes alcoholic depression. Any of you ever had that? Excessive self-absorbed unhappiness over one's troubles. Yeah, it's not fun, is it? And you can be sober and still get this for a while. But we have tools now. You don't have to stay in it. I think I'm going to do one more paragraph. Is that okay? And then open it up. It says, see your man alone, if possible. At first, engage in the general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Now, I'm supposed to tell him about my habits, my symptoms, my experiences, and this will encourage him to speak of yourself. Now, remember when Dr. Bob and Bill met in May of 1935, the difference for Dr. Bob, he knew the Oxford group, he prayed, he understood the spiritual principles, but he didn't understand what was wrong with him. He thought he was a sick, immoral person because he couldn't quit drinking. And when Bill described to him that he has an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind, has no power over it, then Dr. Bob could forgive himself and see he was powerless. He couldn't have been any different. And then he was able to work the steps. And it says, say nothing in a moment of how that was accomplished, but he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. I wrote, connect, one alcoholic talking to another. And then we'll pick up with the next paragraph where they go in further about how you talk to an alcoholic one-on-one. And we'll do that next week. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So, or you want me to go on or you want me to stop? I think we'll stop. Yeah. We did enough. We did 33 minutes. So for those listening, we're going to pick this up next week on page 91. Thank you.